Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. And we have our book pick segment for the first one of the year, and we're thrilled. What better bookseller to join us on this first book pick segment of the year than James Conrad of the Golden Notebook? He's been keeping track of what literary pursuits are worth our time and money in this new year, and it's a great pleasure to welcome James back to the program. Good morning, sir. Always very nice to have you with us. Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Joe. Happy New Year to you. I feel like it's the first day of school.
I know.
We're holiday.
Kind of coming back to all that stuff,
and
right?
To do book reports or something. So
that's right.
But we have some good ones. It's I did this a year ago at around the Christmas time, and it's a funny time of year for books. It's not a lot of new books come out right at the holidays, and January is sort of a slow kind of start to getting publishing going again. But I did find some good ones, so we can start out with some.
All right,
good stuff.
Where would you like to begin?
Well, let's start out talking about death on the new year, but in a kind of a practical and improving your life kind of way. The book is called The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning by Margareta Magnusson. It comes out today. It's a different take sort of on that practical magic of decluttering book that was out a couple years ago. It was a big, you know, by Kondo, I think her name was. Her focus, but it's the same vein of it. She focused on holding the object and deciding if it gives you joy and all that. In Swedish death cleaning, you sort of hold the object and you have to decide whether or not that the poor person who's left to deal with it when you're gone is going to get any joy out of it or not. And it's kind of a way you need to declutter your death as opposed to decluttering your life. It's a Swedish translation of a word of decluttering, which is death cleaning. And I think Scandinavians are actually kind of good at dying, actually. I'm saying this as the son of a Swede-Norwegian who my parents have passed away, but in the last 10 years of their life, they spent a lot of time going through all their belongings and sort of organizing things and giving things away. And that's sort of the point of this book. In Scandinavian tradition, it's customary that you should not leave a big mess behind when you die. The Vikings actually were buried with all of their possessions, which is kind of the ultimate Scandinavian high bar of how to properly leave the earth, I think. But none of this should be looked at as a negative thing in two ways. One is, you actually should consider how much joy it would be to give away some of your prized possessions to the people you want to give them to while you're still alive, as opposed to when you're gone and you can't even be sure that that'll actually happen. And another thing to think about is, as you go through all of your things, you're going to find forgotten memories from other times and other places, other photograph or an object, and you can sort of enjoy it again before it all is gone. So where do you start to do this? The first thing you should start with are your clothes. It's kind of a easy thing to start going through clothes, and especially as you get older, things don't fit you the same way. I mean, they just don't.
Yeah.
And so you get rid of clothes that just don't fit. You get rid of clothes that are worn out and tired and old. And when I think about, like, people being left to go through my tired and old clothes, I kind of get inspired to actually do this activity. And the thing you should do last in your death cleaning is photographs and letters. This was true in the other decluttering book, too, because they're a total rabbit hole. The second you pull out a photo or a letter, your day of work kind of comes to an end. You post it on Facebook. You want to get in touch with the person you're thinking about. You don't get the work done anymore. So save that for the end. But I'm curious about how this book is going to go over, because I have mentioned it to a couple friends, and there's a knee-jerk reaction to, oh, don't give that book to your parents or any older people. That's a terribly rude thing or something. I think people are very afraid of talking about death and dying, and back to the Scandinavians, they have more of a part of it as their culture that they do actually talk about this and where they want to be buried, what to do with their possessions and all that. And so I'm hoping this book will kind of like help bring that about. One last thing, she has a lot of great little tips in it. My favorite cleaning tip in it was when you're mopping or you're vacuuming your house, you should either have big pockets or put a bag over your shoulder, because when you do that, that's when you find objects that are lost under the couch or in the cushions or misplaced, and gather them as you clean and then put them all in the right places and you'll be better organized.
It's a good hint.
I
like that.
That's what I like about it. The new year is starting off with some good hints like that.
The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning. All right, that's number one. That's
now
the book to start off your year.
Let's move on to another death and dying book.
Oh, great.
Well, it's kind of a big topic right now. I was talking to an employee in my store, and we almost think we should start a shelf on death and dying books, because there's books about famous cemeteries to visit. There's books about, you know, how different cultures deal with funerals and deaths and all that. My favorite book of this lot right now is called The Book of Resting Places, A Personal History of Where We Lay the Dead by Thomas Mira Y. Lopez. About a month ago, Abigail Thomas, you know Abigail.
I do.
She came bursting into the store, and she's a wonderful memoirist, and she told me I have to drop everything and read the first essay in this collection of essays, Book of Resting Places. And the store was actually kind of slow at that point, so I thought I'd do the thing that booksellers never do, which is actually read in their bookstore because we have too much to do. But I sat down and I read this essay, and it was this beautifully written account of Lopez's father dying, and he died at a young age, and Lopez was in his, I think, 20s at the time. And the essay is sort of about how he had to deal with that and how he had to sort of fit that all into his life at that point, which is not easy to do when you're young, and how his family was dealing with it, how his father was dealing with dying. And he talks about the Aeneid and classical things about the deaths of fathers. It's a beautiful essay. But I got to the end of it, and this kind of, I won't give it away, but this amazing sort of twist happens at the very end of the essay that is why Abigail Thomas is telling everybody she should read this essay. But the rest of the collection is all tied in with essays that explore the dead and how we remember the dead and how we process funerals and all that in our culture. He lived in Arizona for a time, and there was a burial ground that was exhumed for a new construction. He writes an essay about another essay. He compares the burial rites of pharaohs to his mother talking about where she wants to have her ashes put and how that affects their ideas of the afterlife. And he visits Brazil, where he visits his father's family's burial sites, which are much different than in America, of course. So he kind of uses the book as a way to sort of process his grief and loss of his father. And he does, it's just a wonderful job. And he's coming to our store this Saturday at Saturday, January 6th at 3 p.m. And Abigail Thomas actually has a personal connection to him, so she's going to introduce him, and that'll be at our store this Saturday. So come join us.
Terrific. So that is, the name of the book is The Book of Resting Places, A Personal History of Where We Lay the Dead. All right. Next up, continuing on somewhat in this theme.
Well, we are now going to talk about a book of how not to die. We're going to do the How Not to Die cookbook by Michael Greger. You probably know Michael Greger. The How Not to Die was a very big book of his a while ago. And it's his theories on plant-based dieting being the way to combat everything from diabetes to heart disease, Alzheimer's, even cancers, because he believes that things of high cholesterol affect cancers. He put out now this cookbook, which kind of puts into practice all that he believes. And it's kind of a great thing to start our new year with, because I think we're all waking up from our sugar comas and are kind of thinking about dieting and exercise and eating a little better. And I, for one, am not the best nutritionist, so I'm happy to try this. What I like about him is in the introduction, he talks about how he doesn't consider himself, or he doesn't like to define himself as a vegetarian or a vegan. He thinks these isms are too focused on what you don't eat. And his approach is to, which is whole food, plant-based nutrition. But his approach is that he doesn't want to label things as good or bad for you. Instead, he wants to classify his foods as better for you or worse for you. And an example of that is if you're sitting down with your oatmeal in the morning and you're about to reach for putting dairy milk on it, you should reach for almond milk instead because that would be better for you. So it's sort of a gentler way of trying to encourage you to have better nutrition and better health. And I think that that's, you know, for me at least, that's kind of a nice gateway to get into that. The other thing about the book, which is great, is it's beautifully photographed and things that you look at going, well, dieting and eating better seems like drudgery to some of us. So you look at some of this stuff and you think, oh, well, that would be delicious. I'll have a black bean burger or these things called sloppy jacks, which are made from jackfruit, which I'm not the chef in my house, so I don't really know this stuff, but apparently it's a very hard to find fruit that's new to our country. But now they have it in cans, and so you can just use it in cans. It's not so hard to work with. Anyway, so for a cold day like today, you can have good, healthy meals.
Excellent. It is the How Not to Die cookbook by Michael Greger. All right, next up.
Next up, let's go to a novel, and let's go to one about a killer nanny.
Got something on your mind there, don't
you? Know, I just thought, you know, we'll just keep things in the ballpark here right now. But this is The Perfect Nanny by Leila Slimani, I hope is how to pronounce it. I think this could be the first big book of 2018. It's, I don't know if you saw the large article in last week's New Yorker about her. It was a huge bestseller in France and all around the world. It translated into about 70 languages. And it's her second novel. She won the Goncourt Prize with this novel, which is France's most prestigious literary award. It was won by Proust. She's one of a dozen women to win it, first Moroccan woman to win it. Going back, you probably remember the terrible case in New York City a few years ago where the nanny killed two of the children in her charge. Well, the author, like pretty much anybody, was rather fascinated by this and what in the world could, you know, bring such a thing about. And she actually wrote this novel as a way to try to, you know, sort some of that stuff out. Her first novel dealt with sex addiction, and now this one with this character. She says she doesn't like to, it's not social outcasts that draw her to people. It's more that she is fascinated by people who are in despair. And that's a nice way of putting this, I think. Anyways, I'm not giving anything away with this book when I say it's about a killer nanny. The first sentence is, "The baby is dead." And the chapter literally lays out the death of these two children and the attempted suicide by the nanny and the mother coming home and finding all this. And then somehow you are compelled to read this whole book, and it's because it reads like a mystery thriller. They unravel the woman's whole history prior to being with the family. Then they talk about her time with the family. And it's by knowing what's coming, you're still on the edge of your seat, because in a weird way you almost are like reading it thinking there might be somewhat of a different outcome. It's kind of like reading like true crime fiction, where you know the tragedy happened of the family or whatever that was murdered, but then you still are compelled to read the book because it's so gripping of putting all the things together of what in the world happened here. And the writing's, you know, beautiful too, and it tackles a lot of uncomfortable topics, the main one being leaving your children in the care of somebody who's not their parents or another relative. And, of course, all that falls on the woman, the mother. And even in the case in New York City, there was, like, blame at one point put on the mother for leaving her children with this nanny. And it's sort of a – there's a wonderful line, too, where the mother her father-in-law says to her mother-in-law when she's complaining about her daughter leaving – children in the care with a nanny, that guess what, women are capitalists too, and she's allowed to pursue her own career as well. It's being released as an original paperback, which I think is interesting, because sort of like the Swedish book, I think maybe they're wondering whether it'll be as big of a seller in America because of this tough topic, but that Americans aren't quite as, you know, easy to, like, you know, oh, let's read a book that has this as a premise. But I think it's actually, they're saying, you know, it's going to be like a Gone Girl, or a Girl on a Train type of
right.
book. I think it's actually more like that book, Eileen, in terms of being kind of a dark novel, but still so compelling you can't put it down. It'd be great for book clubs, and because there's so many topics you want to sort of talk about with this book in terms of, you know, class and finances and, you know, leaving your children in care with others and all this. But it's a short novel, but it's really, really, really compelling. So I highly suggest you do it. And we're going to do it for my book club, too.
Okay. We probably have time for one more book.
Oh, let's quickly get in The Goddess of Anarchy, The Life and Times of Lucy Parsons, American Radical, by Jacqueline Jones. Lucy Parsons, of course, was a very famous sort of radical in the late 1800s, Chicago-based, known mainly around the Haymarket bombing. She hasn't had a biography done of her in 40 years, and the main reason for this wonderful new biography, which is done by a very prominent historian who's been nominated for the Pulitzer Prize, Jacqueline Jones, is that she discovered that despite what Lucy Parsons has always maintained, she is actually a black woman. She's always maintained she was Mexican and Native American, which is interesting for the late 1800s that she wanted that to be believed of her. And it was partially a passing thing, I'm sure, and a way for her to be more active in public life without being pegged as being African-American at that time. But it's just one of the many sort of interesting sort of quirks of this very famous radical, like pre, when we had words like communist and all that, red, basically. She was not a feminist. She actually didn't believe women should have the vote because she didn't think we needed to have elections because they were frauds. And her husband was one of the one of the ones executed in the Haymarket bombings in Chicago, even though he had no connection to it that they could prove. And she actually was far more radical with her writings. So it's a wonderful new biography of kind of a American who is, you might not agree with all of her politics, but she's somebody who kind of embodies Americanism in her gusto.
Jacqueline Jones is the author of the new book, Goddess of Anarchy. For more information on the Golden Notebook and Woodstock and the great work they do, you can visit their website, goldennotebook.com, or for goodness sakes, go visit James at 29 Tinker Street in Woodstock. James, it's always great to see you. Thank you very much for being back for another year of Book Picks. Happy New Year to you and to the entire crew. It's lovely to see you.
Thank you, Joe. Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you very much. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.